Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Planet Federal. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
The Coast Guard is all about maritime domain awareness, but it requires more than peering down from a helicopter or looking over the side of a ship with binoculars. For a sense of what it really takes to get full maritime domain awareness, I spoke with former Coast Guard Vice Commandant and former head of the Transportation Security Administration, Peter Neffinger.
The answer has a lot to do with all the things that the Coast Guard has to do and is required to do and is charged with doing. So for the Coast Guard, maritime domain awareness, if you think about the Coast Guard, it's a regulatory agency, it's a law enforcement agency, it's a military organization, not necessarily in that order, but at all times, it's all three of those things. And so maritime domain awareness has a military component to it when we're operating in conjunction with the Navy and other services. Maritime domain awareness has a strong law enforcement component if you're looking for people doing illegal things in the high seas or in waters. That could be everything from smuggling to illegal fishing. And it has a regulatory oversight component as you're looking to manage the movement and operation of our ports and waterways. So you have to know what ships are coming in, what ships are heading out, where they're operating. Are they operating effectively? Are they staying away from prohibited areas and so forth? So maritime domain awareness is a really comprehensive concept for the Coast Guard because it's responsible for so many operations and so many things that are happening in international and U.S. waters.
And gaining that awareness then really is a multimedia, multi-channel type of activity because the ordinary container ship that is following all of the laws, they have their AIS turned on and they transmit into the Commerce Department, you know, what their manifest is, et cetera. There's all these processes and that's pretty much routine. But there's a lot of vessels plying the waters that, as you point out, have nefarious means. And they're not going to have their AIS, and they want to evade detection. So it becomes a multimedia function.
Yes, absolutely. And you raise a very good point. There are a lot of reputable legal operators out there that use their automatic identification systems that notify people where they are and where they're going to be, their port departures, port arrivals, and so forth. So in some senses, we got a large body of information now that you can subtract. You know, I always used to say that it's not about finding the needle in the haystack. It's about getting the hay out of the way so that you can find so that the needle is the only thing left. So part of what you're able to do with a lot of these systems now, AIS being, you know, one of the primary, is you're able to eliminate a lot of noise from the system so that you can begin to try to surface those so-called dark objects out there, those entities that aren't abiding by the rules, that aren't transmitting where their locations are, or that are doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And then you have to rely then upon all sorts of other means. So it is a multimedia. There's open source information. There's sensors that are on aircraft, government operated aircraft. There are, of course, national assets that can come to play in addition to commercial assets that are out there. And all of that has to be somehow merged together in a way that can provide you with something approximating a comprehensive picture of the maritime environment.
And in some ways, you know, every crew on every vessel in the Coast Guard, for example, is part of maritime domain awareness. But is there a particular function there that whose responsibility it is to keep those eyes on the surface and on the surface from above and on the surface from the deck of a ship and so forth? Is there like a awareness officer, for example?
You know, I don't know that there's a specific awareness officer on board a vessel, but there are, you know, there's a maritime intelligence fusion centers that the Coast Guard operates. Those are connected to other intelligence fusion centers across the federal government, the navies in particular. And those offices are tasked with bringing together, you know, all that multi-source information that you mentioned earlier, and then distributing it out to the appropriate assets. So if you're looking at a Coast Guard cutter, that's sort of a tactical, you know, endpoint. And it will be reporting on what it's seeing as in addition to receiving information from those fusion centers, as I mentioned. All of that just goes back into trying to create a more comprehensive picture. But as for the ship itself, you've got certainly the crew is focused on accurately reporting what they're seeing, sending that information back, both to, for its own local picture, as well as sending it back for a component part of the national picture, if you will.
Is it mostly satellite imagery that the fusion centers are looking at?
You know, I don't know if it's mostly. There's certainly satellite imagery as a component of it, but signals intelligence is part of it. The sensor data coming off of aircraft that are overflying. CBP, for example, has overflight aircraft that are in the maritime domain, Coast Guard aircraft, other aircraft that are providing. So we have, it's probably a combination of all of the above, if you will. There's satellite imagery. It's, you know, that's a more strategic picture, if you will, because it's, you know, they're positioned, many of them geostationary. Others are making passes over defined areas. And then if they indicate some area of interest, then you can send out aircraft and others for more specific information to fill in the picture.
Just as a matter of detail, what types of sensors are on planes such as operated by CBP? What can you pick up that's not, you know, an electronic signal from AIS, that type of thing, or a picture from above? What can you sense about something?
Yeah, generally it's imagery. You know, you're getting imagery, or you're getting, like I said, primarily imagery, and it can be infrared imagery and just you know, regular wide broad spectrum imagery that comes in. So typically that's picked up either incidentally, you know, as a function of what they're doing on their patrol, or sometimes it's targeted. Hey, we need you to go look at this area to see if what we think we're seeing out there is really what we're seeing.
So the aircraft, and I suppose it could be unmanned aircraft in this day and age, can get a close-up, basically, of what the satellite indicates is something you might want to take a closer look at.
Yeah, that's an example. So let's just say you did get some imagery from a commercial satellite that said, geez, we don't know what's going on out here. You could then target or direct an aircraft to that location to try to see what you could pick up.
And this is really detailed, and maybe there is no answer, but for example, if there is living matter, animals or people, below deck, can that be picked up by an infrared or some kind of a heat sensor from flying close?
It depends. I mean, there are, you know, IR technology is pretty sophisticated these days, and it can be used to indicate whether you have heat sources such as humans or others on board a vessel. The important thing, though, is finding the vessel. You know, if you find a vessel, then you can direct an asset like a Coast Guard cutter to go investigate and see what it's up to.
And intent, I
or
imagine.
Or follow it, if you will.
Yes, and the course intent of a vessel must really matter, because if you get a snapshot of a ship you're suspicious of and it's going away, well, maybe that's one response. But if over 2 days, hey, why is it heading there when it started there? That is information, too.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's really critical when it comes to, you know, trying to find the people who are fishing illegally. You know, there's a number of international treaties with respect to fishing areas, and there are sovereign areas out to 200 miles for exclusive economic zone for individual nations. But there's a lot of what's called illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing in the world, so-called IUU fishing. And you may need to, if you want to prove a case in court, whether it's your own court or international court, you've got to indicate that vessel transited into an area, they spent enough time in that area to have fished suspiciously, spending enough time in that area, and you've got to find out where they went to. And all of that becomes part of the evidence chain for determining whether somebody's done something illegal. So you're absolutely right. You have to, it's not just a snapshot. You really have to develop a track for that vessel over time.
Right. And it's not just the United States, because the United States has interests and sanctions, for example, around the world. So I've heard of cases where illicit oil production has moved from Russia to places where it's sanctioned. And the United
exactly.
States has been able to see that type of thing going on.
Yeah, and the sanctions trade monitoring is a real challenge, as you probably know, and that's been going on for a number of decades now, all the way back to some of the initial sanctions on Iranian oil, you know, shortly after the Iranian hostage event. So following sanctions trade is a big challenge. It's a global challenge, and it is a global maritime domain awareness challenge.
But whether fishing or smuggling or sanctions trade, this type of thing, it's necessary to have a picture of vessels over time. In other words, the persistence over time is an important component of the imagery gathering.
Well, it is, because you want to understand, you know, the dynamics of what's happening. A single snapshot may show you a bunch of dots out there on the water, but it doesn't tell you anything about what their intent might be. And in determining intent is the most challenging. You know, I used to say when I was at TSA, I used to say that there are really three components to security and understanding a situation. It's visibility, identity, and its purpose. So you want to see it first. You want to identify what it is. So if I see an image on a dot on the water, I want to know what is that thing? Is it a commercial vessel? Is it a military vessel? Is it a fishing vessel? So forth. And then I want to find out what's its purpose. And purpose is all about tracking things over time. You know, if I see a container ship coming across, and I see that same container ship every week moving back and forth from Asia to the West Coast of the United States, it's pretty clear what its purpose is. It's delivering cargo. CBP will worry about what that cargo is, but the Coast Guard just cares that it's a real vessel, it's doing something it's supposed to be doing, and it's making the appropriate notifications. Getting that dynamic picture is key. It's analogous to what the people who manage our air systems, FAA and their counterparts around the world. That picture that they have that you can download on an app called FlightAware, that picture that they have is a dynamic picture. You know, if all you saw was a whole bunch of aircraft in the sky, you'd have no idea whether two of those aircraft were on a collision course. So the whole idea is to see it in motion to determine whether it's doing what it should be doing.
Planet's satellite data provides unmatched coverage of the Earth's waters. With global daily satellite imagery, you can monitor ports and coastlines, detect and track vessels, and uncover suspicious activity in contested waters. Learn how government bodies, coast guards, border security, and environmental agencies are leveraging Planet to monitor and protect their waters at go.planet.com/MDA. That's go.planet.com/MDA.
Welcome back to my interview with Peter Neffinger of Neffinger Consulting, former Coast Guard Vice Commandant and former head of the Transportation Security Administration. Our topic is maritime domain awareness and how to enhance it with modern technology. And I wanted to discuss imagery itself with you, and especially satellite imagery, because NOAA has satellites, the military has satellites, and then there is this burgeoning industry of commercial satellites that provide imagery. And to get that persistence of pictures of vessels that we were talking about earlier, sometimes clouds come over, sometimes it's nighttime, and so you talk about the sources of data that you need, because clear day, sunny day pictures is only one source, a great one, but what happens at night and when it's cloudy?
Well, you know, there are lots of different ways to get imagery. You can have direct, clear, just, you know, camera type imagery, if you will, and take a picture. But you're right, when you've got cloudy days or otherwise weather that gets in the way, then that's of limited value. But you also have infrared imagery, there's synthetic aperture radar imagery, there's all sorts of ways in which you can look through weather to get imagery. So all of that combines, and it just depends on what the current concern is as to whether you look for one or more of those types of sensor sources or data sources. But the real key is to figure out what I care about. So if I'm looking for illegal fishing, you know, operations, we typically know where those happen. For us, it's out in the Pacific, around the Pacific Islands regions. There's a lot of illegal fishing that goes on out there, whether it's high seas drift net fishing or long lining or just coming in with purse seine nets and trying to take as much as you can of somebody else's fish. And so you may see, well, what types of imagery capability do we have that's passing over that area? And it's a combination of commercial and national assets and maybe some airborne assets that you might have a Coast Guard C-130 that's doing a patrol in the Pacific, and you may say, hey, we're getting some indication of some what looks like to unusual activity in this region. Can you take a pass over that? So there's no probably one single answer to that, Tom, but it's a combination of, hey, what's our weather look like? What do we need to see? Where do we think we might have to take a look? And then what do we have available, both open source commercial as well as national assets and other assets that might help us to bring a bigger picture together of what we're looking for.
And what is the interagency and international mechanisms above all that to decide how to respond? For example, if someone's longlining illegally, but they're outside of the coastal territorial waters of the United States, they're out of reach, say, of the Coast Guard. Well, you're not going to send Navy ships after every fisherman. We don't have that many Navy ships. And as you say, it's a really big world. And so what happens? Or maybe another nation, it's their fish that's being concerned. It's closer to their waters than ours. We found it. Is there a mechanism to tell that other nation? And if something moves into the waters, is there a way to tell the Coast Guard? That kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a great question. And if you allow me to back up just a bit on
sure.
that, and talk about one of the things that the Coast Guard does, and I did a lot of work on this myself when I was on active duty. First of all, we belong to a number of the United States, and the Coast Guard is the arm of the United States on the maritime for purposes of fisheries enforcement. We belong to a number of international treaties. We've acceded to a number of international treaties with respect to fisheries. And that gives us the ability to enforce those treaties on behalf of a signatory nation. So that also gave us the ability to do a lot of work with other signatory nations, particularly the smaller island nations of the Pacific, to both build their own capacity for responding to people fishing illegally, whether it's patrol boats and training and so forth, but also to work cooperatively with them. So all that is a preface to saying that the Coast Guard has longstanding international cooperative agreements with countries around the world that are signatories to various fisheries treaties to jointly support one another's enforcement of fisheries laws in their own exclusive economic zones. We might not be able to take direct action against a vessel, but we can direct other nations' actions towards those vessels. It's a great arrangement. There's never enough assets out there to catch. I mean, there's still a lot of people doing bad things out there, but it extends the ability to reach, if you will, into areas that would otherwise be impossible for us to manage.
And let's walk inside a fusion center for a moment. And you have people that are taking in imagery from national assets, national security assets and national, civilian assets such as NOAA. Increasingly, and even the NGA, a lot of agencies say, oh, yeah, we're using open source and commercial mm-hmm. data. And again, the commercial satellite industry is really burgeoning. What are some of the issues with respect to merging data to a total picture? There's intellectual mm-hmm. property, maybe patent or copyright issues, perhaps, that come into this. How does that get handled?
Yeah, the specifics, I think, really go down to individual companies that are operating. But I know that there are agreements that the U.S. government has, purchasing agreements that allow us to purchase imagery from commercial providers. And there's sometimes contracts with commercial providers that will get a certain amount of imagery out of any particular pass of the satellite. But the real challenge is merging open source data and data from other classified sources. And one of the things that the Fusion Center does is they work really hard to not mix those two in a way that can compromise classified sources, but by the same token allows us to take advantage of what some of those sources might provide. The good news is that there's so much good imagery coming out of commercial open source satellite data that it's and for purposes of what the Coast Guard does, it can be just as good as anything else that might be out there. So it's become with the proliferation of commercial source, it actually has improved the ability to get kind of a picture of what might be happening in regions of interest.
So at this point, operators might still have to look at two screens, one the classified data coming in and one the commercial
Exactly.
or open source data coming in.
Yeah. And the big thing is not to push that. They're not trying to push that the classified stuff out to, just trying to merge a picture that says, hey, here's an area. You think about it, what we're really trying to do is direct assets to areas of concern or be aware of potential bad operators that you can then, eventually everybody's got to come back to port. So you can, you know, if you can be aware of a potential bad operator and you can follow that person, you can just sort of pick them up when they land, you know, or when they pull up to a line alongside the dock. Sometimes that's a heck of a lot easier than trying to intercept them at sea.
But fair to say that the imagery picture has really improved in the last 20 years because of just the proliferation of data. I mean, you know, we all look at Google Maps and take it for granted now, and we look at the layer. You know, I saw the shed appear in my own backyard. You know, I hope the city doesn't see that. I didn't get a permit for the shed.
You know, yeah, it's really astonishing. In fact, it's increased the size of the hay pile, if you will. So there's a whole lot more to sort through now than there used to be. But things like artificial intelligence and other tools show some promise to help sort rapidly through some of that so that you can create some algorithms that account for, you know, things that are normal and expected. But it's almost overwhelming the amount of data that you have to work with now. In its own way, that's a challenge because people can hide in data too.
Right. And also knowing they're being observed, operators that want to hide from legitimate sources are getting better at disguising their vessels. I mean, they can
use
different paints and different tarps and stuff. I mean, very old techniques, but updated with the understanding that there's an eye in the sky almost all the time looking at them.
Yeah, you can operate an automatic identification system in an illegal way if you're really dedicated to hiding from people.
Yeah, and you can also, I mean, you could conceivably paint your ship a different color overnight.
This is true. And you look at some of the, you know, vessels that have been hijacked and stolen, they'll weld a new name on the stern in a heartbeat, and suddenly it becomes a new vessel.
Yeah, what should we call this one, Charlie? Let's pull that sign number three.
<That's right. laughs>
And a final question, can you, with satellite imagery and different technologies applied from them, see below the surface? Because, you know, the Coast Guard has been famous and the Navy's been famous for intercepting submersibles that are not too far down like a Navy submarine, but that they're underwater.
Yeah, I mean, some of that gets into some pretty technical information, but I will say that you can, you know, it's astonishing what you can see from the air just with your naked eyeball. The ocean's fairly clear and open and unclouded in most of the world, so that you can see down pretty deep. I mean, if you've ever gone scuba diving, you know that you can get pretty good visibility. So some of it's air asset. The challenge with a submersible, though, is you got to have some intelligence that tells you where it might be operating before you can begin. You can't just go out looking for things like that because it's almost impossible you have just too much area to cover. So that's when those fusion centers come back into play. Hey, what kinds of intelligence are we getting about where a vessel like that might be being built, where it may be launched, where it may be departing from, and where's its destination? Where's it, you know, if it's a drug smuggler, well, we're pretty comfortable with understanding where things like that come into this country. Now, it doesn't mean you'll know their route, but we know that there's only a certain number of ways they can get from point A to point B. And so you can concentrate some of your attention on those areas as well. But subsurface is a challenge. There's no doubt about it.
Peter Neffinger of Neffinger Consulting, former Coast Guard Vice Commandant and former head of the Transportation Security Administration. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Planet Federal on Federal News Network.